Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRT-LP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You'll find us online at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I am your host. Thanks for tuning in today. And today it's time for our annual movie show with Derek Bang. He's the film critic for the Davis Enterprise and for his blog, Derek Bang on Film. So, Derek, welcome back.
Bill, thank you. It seems like I was just here.
Well, yes, and close listeners will understand that that's an allusion to last week's show, which is when we had Derek and Sean and Jason Mendelson in talking about the extended Vince Guaraldi re-releases. In addition to writing movie reviews, Derek is an expert on Vince Guaraldi and Peanuts, too, for that matter, although that's not really coming up today. You do a lot.
I like to keep busy.
So. But anyway, I didn't want that to throw off this annual movie show. I look forward to this every year.
Oh, so do I.
But I do have to say, I want to start this year with an observation, and maybe it's a confession, which is to say I saw only one movie in a theater this year.
Well, you would be in good company.
Well, but you know, it's a big change for me, because when I was younger, I would see movies every weekend.
Was it a good movie?
Well, this year was See How They Run.
Okay, so you did pick a good one.
I enjoyed it, and I was at the Varsity, and I like going to the Varsity. It's my favorite theater in town. I like it just as a movie house. The same thing happened last year. Last year, I only saw one movie, also at the Varsity, Nomads.
Oh, well, you picked another good one.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, it got me thinking. You watch movies professionally. How do you stay interested in seeing movies? Because after all, even favorite experiences can get old.
Well, yes, that's true. It's the old chocolate milkshake paradox, right?
Yeah, yes. I was going to say just that.
One is good. You know, one is great. Two is great. Two are great. Three are great. Four, five, six, not so great.
Yeah, yeah. And you've had like 50 years of chocolate milkshake.
Well, 50 years of chocolate milkshake several times a week. You know, every time I walk into a theater, or more recently, as a result of the pandemic, sit down in front of our TV set, I'm open-minded. I hope to have a good time. I hope to enjoy what I'm about to watch. I'm really not jaded. There are certain things that will become wearing after a while. Like right at the moment, it would not bother me if at least a year passed before I had to watch another superhero movie.
Mm. Yes.
And many of them are very entertaining. And that's not really the point. There are just too many milkshakes coming from the superhero factory at the moment.
Yeah, well, I guess that's part of it. There's a sense, I mean, the pandemic is part of it, but I was reading up on this a little bit about why people go or don't go to movies. And again, earlier this year, we talked about this with you, with Matthias.
Bombal,
yeah.
Yes.
About people going back to theaters. But partly it's people like to watch from home. They like the ability to, you know, schedule it their own time, you know, and the variety, things like that. I do still enjoy going to the theaters, but I think there's a sameness to it that just has made it
well,
a little duller.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. And part of the problem here is that, yes, there was always going to be, and there had been, a gradual decline in theater attendance as the movie services at home became more aggressive with what they were putting out in their own original content. The pandemic accelerated that. And the problem is when you train people into new behaviors, which the pandemic did for a solid 2 years, a lot of those behaviors are going to stick. It's very hard to unlearn them. And so many people got out of the habit of going to the movies that I very much fear that chunk of folks, they're not coming back.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad the Varsity is still here and for the other theaters in town as well.
I think a movie theater experience is critical because the thing that you lose, well, the thing that I lose, because this is my profession, when I watch at home, is the audience experience. It is important to me to know what a full theater of people is doing while I'm watching the film as they're watching the film.
So important to you as a critic?
Absolutely. I like to know if I'm the only one in the house who liked the film. Conversely, I like to know if I'm the only one in the house who loathed the film while everybody else is having a good time. Yeah. That doesn't necessarily make me wrong, but it's definitely going to be a component of what I let her write about.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure your opinion would be whatever your opinion is.
Of course.
But it would give you an insight into...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then also there's the excitement factor. Nothing beats seeing a great film in a big theater full of people.
Yeah.
And the shared crowd response. That is awesome.
I suppose that's partly what people recreate, like on a Sunday when they gather the gang around to watch a football game or something.
Sure, on a smaller scale, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, same basic idea. Let's make it a social event.
You know, it's how much fun is it to watch a football game by yourself? Not very.
Yeah, especially depending on the team. So before we get into the movies, and I do want to talk about them, but any ideas for those of us who are more mere mortals and don't maybe have your sustained interest in movie going? How we might sort of stay interested?
Well, part of the problem here now is the exponentially dwindling number of reputable critical sources. Newspapers, when they were larger, when they arrived daily, would do their best, particularly the larger metropolitan papers. If you subscribe to something like, say, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, San Francisco Chronicle, they'd cover every movie that came out. And if you trained yourself to the taste of a given writer, you had a very good idea whether you're going to like or dislike the film that they were discussing. It's almost impossible to get that reference point these days because, A, newspapers are disappearing or they've gotten smaller, published less frequently. They have no hope of covering literally every movie that comes out, also because a lot more movies are coming out than were being made 30 and 40 years ago. And then also, what has taken over include IMDb star ratings. Oh, it's a 5. I'm not going to bother.
You know, on a scale of 10.
Right. Case, you know, oh, it's a 7.5. I mean, you know, maybe we should go. I mean, that's not a statement of quality or content.
Yeah. Well, you raise an interesting point here. I mean, you're a critic and you've done it, as I say, since the 70s, since you wrote for the California Aggie.
Right, yeah.
And you post some on your blog every week that that the Enterprise, you know, the Enterprise prints one a week usually.
Right. And I try to go for 2 or 3 a week.
But it's true that it's not too hard to find an opinion about a movie, but finding an opinion that actually tells you something other than, it was great, sucks.
Well,
it's like, okay, right. Thank you. I mean,
the phrase here, the adjective we're looking for is a learned opinion or an informed opinion.
Well, because learned can sound a little stuffy, but there were critics also who just simply, they were telling you something, they knew something.
Roger Ebert
always
had a good time at the movies, even when he hated what he was watching. And he conveyed that beautifully. I mean, there's a reason he won so many awards.
Yeah, he was a fine writer.
He was a people's critic.
Yeah.
You would not find a Roger Ebert film review in the New Yorker.
Yeah. We should mention, I want to mention, your blog is Derek Bang on Film. And help me again with the URL.
DerekBang.blogspot.com.
Yep. Yeah, well, I know. In a way, I just asked you what's your own phone number, right? No one ever knows what their own phone number is. They just...
You saw me frowning.
Well, I asked you because I've looked it up many, many times, but I just go there now on my computer. You know, it's trained. I start typing in Derek in the command line and boom, there it
is. I know. If I spent more money, I could probably, you know, trademark Derek Bang on Film or something like that.
But anyway, it's there. And the point is there are other reviews you post there. And there's other critics out there as well. Matthias posts reviews. And I guess to get back to the original question, your point is partly, well, if you can find a way to keep learning about new movies, that's one way to stay interested. And I will say, you know, we've done this End of the Year show for about 10 years now. And when we first started doing it, and we'll get to that here in a minute, I would ask you, well, what movies are coming up that you're looking forward to and things like that. And 10 years ago, I probably had heard of more of those movies. And
yes.
And now,
yes.
As often as not, when I hear you mention it, it's like, I've never even heard of that one before. And I think it speaks to what you're talking about. There's just less information out there.
Well, less information and more product.
Yes, yes, both those things. But like I was looking at last Sunday's New York Times and they had a 2-page spread. They were talking about movies that are coming up. And I thought, well, this is partly what...
Right, I saw that article.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is part of what we'll get into today. And frankly, it's part of the reason I like doing this show. I sort of see it as a chance to talk with our local critic about what's coming up that's worth seeing or worth avoiding.
The point to be you know, to put this particular thought to bed, it requires more work today to become an informed reader, viewer, than it did 30 and 40 years ago.
And it requires more of the institutions to actually pay for the work, too.
I mean, you know, you have to work at it more. If you're going to read people online, you need to find out who you can trust. I like the reviews published by The Guardian over in England. They know what they're talking about.
Yeah, the internet's been good for that. I mean, you can find things far away. But I got to thinking, it's almost like we need movie clubs like we have book clubs.
That's a good thought.
You know, people get together and they say, hey, let's go to the movie or see the movie and then talk about it. And then that kind of keeps an interest going. And there's a social aspect, too, that maybe keeps some of that theater engagement you're talking about. But well, anyway, okay. I do want to stay in the game. And let's get on to 2022's year-end movies. In fact, I'm going to take a quick station ID because if you just tuned in, you're thinking, why am I asking this guy? It's because it's Derek Bang. This is Derek Bang, who is the film critic for the Davis Enterprise and Derek Bang on film. I am Bill Buchanan. This is Davis Phil on KDRT in Davis, California. And this is our annual year-end movie show. So, Derek, what are you looking forward to?
The Fablemans, top of the list.
Steven Spielberg's movie.
His semi-autobiographical picture. It's getting rave reviews. I'm sure it's going to be wonderful.
And so this is about, he grew up in California, right?
He did.
So I think anybody who grew up in California, in fact, I will confess a slight, he lived in my hometown for 1 year. I don't think he had a good experience there. And I've been kind of curious to see how that might be reflected in the movie. But any Californian, I think, might have a special attachment to this if you're of a certain age.
Absolutely. Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, the sequel to Knives Out with Daniel Craig as that fussy detective.
Okay.
Really looking forward to that.
See, that's one I entirely missed. So,
yeah, that's coming out. A lot of things these days, you get two release dates. They have a theatrical release date, and then now they're also telling you that 3-4 weeks later, it'll pop up on Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And that's one of those. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Oh, yes. Stop motion.
Stop motion like clay stop motion?
Doesn't look like it. Looks like puppet. Puppet stop motion.
Okay, now we had a Pinocchio just a couple of years ago,
Well, actually, we've had several Pinocchios in the last couple of years. But Guillermo del Toro, I mean, you know, he's the man when it comes to unsettling storylines. And Pinocchio has always been a dark tale, which you don't necessarily get as much of in the Disney version.
You get a vestige of it in the Disney version, I think, you know, with the idea that they're all getting turned into donkeys and things like that.
Right.
Okay, so?
I Want to Dance with Somebody, the Whitney Houston story. Looks very good. Be interesting to see how Naomi Aki handles the lead role.
So she's portraying Whitney Houston.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Babylon. Now, this one appeals to me for all kinds of reasons. It's Damien Chazelle, who did La La Land and Whiplash, and it's his take on early Hollywood as it was transitioning from silence to the talkies. And as the title Babylon would suggest, the Sin City component that was attached to filmmaking back in the 30s and early 40s with Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie. So we've got a terrific cast on top of everything else.
I just saw an article, I think this was in the New York Times also, about the set design. And they were talking about how part of what they wanted to convey was that the Los Angeles in the 20s was basically still largely desert.
It was. There was nothing there.
Yeah, so you had these mansions surrounded by dust.
Yes.
Okay.
And then finally, A Man Called Otto.
I don't know that one at all.
Tom Hanks, starring as the grumpiest man in America. And initially, I thought, oh. But then I found out that it's actually a remake of the 2015 Swedish film, A Man Called Ove, which I loved, which was terrific. I believe it got a couple of Oscar nominations. And the director on the new version is Mark Forster, who has the right touch for that kind of story. He did Finding Neverland years and years ago.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about the plot?
Hanks lives, well, Otto lives in a housing complex, and he's just generally known and despised as a grump. He's on the planning committee, and he makes sure that everybody follows every little rule to the absolute, you know, last cross T and dotted I.
Total pain in the rear, in other words.
Yes, and then a family moves in. He gets new neighbors. who are simply immune to his lousy mood.
Okay, now that's where it started to sound more interesting. I mean, Tom Hanks, I like watching him. But that sounded like the sort of a staple kind of a story, you know, grump comes along, change of heart, everything is sunshine. But the idea that you might have neighbors who are just immune to it, that maybe is more interesting than just winning him over.
Well, and again, as I said, if they adapt the Swedish film faithfully, it'll be terrific.
Yeah. And so you've seen the Swedish film.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay. I immediately remembered it.
Okay. Well, this is intriguing now.
So there's what, half a dozen for you?
I think so. And so these are all ones between now and the end of the year, more or less?
The Tom Hanks film probably won't land in the Sacramento region until January.
Okay.
But it is doing the hop in major cities in order to qualify for Oscar consideration before the end of the year.
Okay. Now, just a little sidebar there, because when you said land in Sacramento, I thought, okay, at one point a movie would debut in like New York and L.A., and as a resident of Northern California, I thought, okay, that's where the industry is. They're doing the debut for like the Academy Awards. I would be more miffed if I thought it was in 15 or 30 cities across the country, but ours wasn't on that list. It'd be like, wait a minute.
Well, I have two answers to that. Answer number one is that, yes, I'm sorry to say it, folks, the Sacramento Valley is a secondary market, quote unquote.
Well, that's just realistic, honestly.
On the other hand, and this may not be any better, the Sacramento market is also recognized as a quintessentially average American market. So there are a lot of films, not the big blockbusters, that will open here as sort of a test market.
You know, that's very practical, and I totally get it, but it's also hilarious to me. It's like the idea of, you know, let's see how this plays with the average people. Go open it in Sacramento.
Yeah, go open it in Sacramento, right?
And again, I wonder how Davis plays into that, too, because, you know, that's the old joke, is everybody here is, you know, above average. And
so, draw from both of those observations what you will.
Okay. We were talking a minute ago about movies. Do you still see, where in theaters, I mean, do you still watch movies in theaters to review them, or are you streaming them these days?
What's
available to you, I guess, because that's part of the change, too.
We talked about this last year, so I won't repeat myself completely. But as a quick overview, pre-pandemic, it was typical for me to drive to a theater in Sacramento for a preview screening two or three times a week. It was a rare week that did not have at least two, and we're talking in-person screenings here, you know, crowded, filled by people picking up passes from a local radio station DJ. And obviously, when the pandemic hit, that stopped completely. It tried to come back in fits and starts for the next couple of years, failing several times as the variants hit. Well, let's just flash forward to right now. One a week at best in a theater. The slack is made up with streaming screeners that the studios provide for us at home, which frankly are a pain in the neck to deal with because they involve all kinds of double authentication codes and, you know, and I get it, okay?
Sure.
You know, they don't want people to steal their films, and that would be fine, except not all double authentication processes are created equal. Some of them work very well, and of them don't work well at all.
What, technology not working perfectly? That's surprising. Yeah.
Anyway, but so last week we had one.
Okay.
This upcoming week, I have two in a theater. Some of them are still press only.
Okay.
In fact, of the two in I should speak in the past. Of the two that I had last week, I should say.
Okay, in terms of when people are hearing this show. Yeah,
right.
Got it.
The first one was a quote-unquote filled screening, and the second one was critics only.
Are there enough press people still covering movies to fill even a small theater anymore?
You know, Gaina and I walked into...
That's your wife, yeah.
Gaina, my wife. And I walked into a critics only screening about, I want to say, 6 months ago. It was probably toward the beginning of the summer. And there were two other critics there. So there were four of us in the theater, plus the handler, who is the liaison with the studio reps over in San Francisco, plus two security guards to make sure none of us filmed the movie. And I looked at our handler and I said, how much does it cost to rent one of these houses for an event like this? And he said, well, obviously it depends on the size of the house. And this was a small to mid-sized house. They said, about $400. And I looked at Gannon and I said, I had no idea they thought that highly of me.
Well,
I mean, really, that's nuts.
No, well, and that's why it's going streaming, I'm sure. That's you're saying, you know, that's part of the evolution. But when you said for press only, I thought, man, there can't be too many more film critics
well,
left in the
if
area.
Well, if everybody shows up, there's about 2 dozen of us.
Okay. And, of course, I'm sure a lot are bloggers and such these days.
Right. Media influencers.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another whole subject right there. But
Social media influencers. Too many of them are along the lines of, oh, that was a great movie. I loved it.
Yeah, well, that gets back to the idea of, okay, great, you liked it. Now tell us why. Give us some insights. What movies do you think this year, one or two maybe, do you think have been culturally significant?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to start with two that actually were late 2021, but they didn't arrive here until early 2022. The Tender Bar. Oh, I love that film. Adaptation of J.R. Moeringer's novel, Ben Affleck.
What was that about?
It's a coming-of-age story. Follows a young boy who spends a lot of time with his uncle who tends bar in their small East Coast community. And I was so impressed with the film that I went out and bought the book and read it, which is always a good thing, and discovered that it's a remarkably faithful adaptation of the book, which is also a rare thing.
Okay.
Kenneth Branagh's Belfast. Oh, what a wonderful movie that was.
Actually, I did see that movie on Netflix or whatever. Yes.
Just a phenomenal film. Excellent piece of history. Rise, the story of the three Nigerian, I'm never going to pronounce the family name correctly, Antetokounmpo family.
Okay.
And the three sons that they raised who became championship basketball players. I mean, I haven't seen a film that so poignantly depicted the struggle and hard work that people from other parts of the world go through in order to do anything and then subsequently reach our shores and succeed on a level that, looking back, seems phenomenal. 13 Lives, the film about the rescue of the Thai young soccer players.
From the cave. Yeah, where they had to get through the water on the way out.
Gripping film. I'm still trying to figure out how they filmed a lot of that movie. It looked so real.
Yeah, that was one I thought, I don't know that I could watch that because I know it was good and it would be intense.
We saw it on a big screen and it was so claustrophobic.
Yeah.
It is so claustrophobic. And then, of course, more recently, Till.
Yes.
The Emmett Till story so beautifully and sensitively and honorably brought to the big screen. Not an easy thing to do, considering the level of depravity that story represents.
And I guess this draws me back to why I like movies in the first place, is because they're like books, right? Or like music, for that matter. It's a medium, but you can do such stirring things with it, with a movie, with the sound and the visuals. And I think being in the theater, and so listening to you describe these movies right now, it's like that. That's not just entertainment, you know, that's going deeper. And I like movies for that.
It's art.
I mean, I like it as a lark also. I have guilty pleasures, movies that I see that, you know, people roll their eyes at.
Oh, sure. You know. And I would not call any of the films I just mentioned a quote-unquote guilty pleasure.
No.
Perhaps The Tender Bar is the most benign on that list. But yes, we don't just want to be entertained. Although a lot of times people don't realize this, we want to be transformed.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the theater experience when it really works, I think. Now, I do want to ask, we have a few minutes left. What are you not looking forward to? Usually every year you've got a couple of movies where you'll say, watch out for this. This is part of the fun part of it. I also want to ask you about some of your ones you didn't like this year. But any you would warn us away from based on what you know now?
Bones and All.
Okay.
A story, a love story, starring Timothy Chalamet, of all people, about modern young cannibals in love.
Okay. Is this supposed to be campy, or is this supposed to be serious? Or
I'm not quite sure. I mean, it's based on a novel.
So are you going to, like, review this one? I'm curious.
I'm hoping to avoid it, but it always depends on whether it pops up.
Yeah, okay.
A Christmas Story Christmas.
A Christmas Story Christmas.
Yes, we all remember A Christmas Story, film. Well, the young kid star of that film, Peter Billingsley, is back now as a father and having his own Christmas Story experience.
Oh, okay. This sounds like sequelitis inflamed.
Yes, yeah. Sequelitis interruptus, I hope.
Okay. Now, that's actually a nice segue. I was looking back over all your blog posts this year, and it's like sports writing. It's fun sometimes to read about the disasters. It's just fun. So you had a few headlines here, and I thought we have just a few minutes left, but if you just give me a quick idea on why these movies, you trashed them. One was, and I'm just going to quote the headline, folks, and then, Derek, I'll toss it to you. Lost City, don't bother finding it.
Dumb plot, lousy continuity. I hate it when things happen in a story in the first act that should be referenced in the second and third act, but simply vanish. So this is what you get when hands after the fact attempt to fix a bad movie and just make it worse. And stars with no chemistry. I mean, there was absolutely nothing to recommend that film.
So it's almost like a case study in
how not to make a movie.
Yeah.
Or how not to release a movie. Let's put it that way.
Another one. Nope. My sentiments exactly.
Yeah. I thought Jordan Peele's Get Out was brilliant, okay? An absolutely astonishing, clever, relevant, snarky film. Unfortunately, he's kind of following in M. Night Shyamalan's footsteps. Every subsequent film has been lesser.
Hmm. Well, he's young.
The previous one, Us, it had a good premise, but a terrible execution. And Nope, just the dumbest plot concept I have seen in a long time. And once again, a failure to honor the rules that were set up in the first act in order to bring about a happy conclusion in the third act.
Okay.
That's just sloppy.
And then we've got one more here. Halloween Ends, as well it should.
I have no respect for the makers of a franchise who feel that they can put anything on the screen because there are going to be enough fans drawn to the title of the movie who won't care and will come and it'll make money. And it did.
Okay. So this is, all right. That's pretty clear. Disdain for the formula that sort of insults the audience.
Well, yes. I mean, to me, these are filmmakers with an absolute contempt for their fans. And that's not very nice.
Anything quickly you're really looking forward to in 2023?
Maybe I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. And that just,
the things have changed. It used to be I'd know 6 months ahead of time what was coming. That window has now shrunk to about a month and a half.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I don't really have a clear view of 2023 yet.
Well, that's the one reason we do this show every year. not just to take care of 2023, but just to get a look ahead. Derek, we're at the end of the clock again for this year, but thank you so much for talking with us again today.
Oh, I had a great time. I always do.
Derek Bang, film critic for the Davis Enterprise and his blog. I am Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville on KDRT in Davis, California. Thank you for listening.